This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Local 53 has a bright future. It's time for you to plan for yours as well. The exclusive sponsors are show, the law firm, Kondorian Murad. They'll help you update your last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family, schedule a free consultation. Their estate planning attorneys are available now. Check them out. Set up a consultation at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you. You'll get a discount. kmlawyers.com. We've been telling you throughout the day that right here ahead of the Blitz at 4 o'clock, we've got Caps tickets for you, so let's give those away. Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You're going to win a pair of tickets to see the Capitals Thursday, October 31st. That's Halloween night, Capital One Arena, against the Montreal Canadiens. For tickets and complete Cap schedule, go to thefandc.com/contest. We'll cover the Caps, the Commanders, coming up in our Beltway Blitz, but let's get things started right now. A rare pit stop in Wizards land on the Beltway Blitz to get the latest on what's going on with their preseason. Chase Hughes of Monumental Sports joins us now. Been a while, Chase. What do we need to know about the preseason so far, man?
Well, they've played four out of their five games. They've got one more tune-up before opening night, which is next week. And you know, so far, I think you've seen some good things from their young players, particularly their rookies. They've got three first-round picks that they're debuting this year. Of course, Alex Saar, the second overall pick, Bub Carrington, who was 14th overall, and Keyshawn George, who was picked 24th. And he's been a really nice surprise so far. But they are a young team, and it is the preseason, so obviously there's a lot of things that they're going to need to work on, and I think defense remains a work in progress. But we've seen some positive signs there. I think their offense is what they're kind of struggling to get going right now, but so far so good with the rookies.
Early returns on Jordan Poole handling the point.
I mean, the shooting percentages have not been great, but I think you've seen more of what we saw down the stretch of last season, which was much better than we saw in the first half of last year, which, you know, of course he was playing off the ball more as a two guard. Now he's pretty firmly entrenched, I think, as the starting point guard. They've made some changes to their starting lineup throughout the preseason, but he's been a mainstay at that spot. I think what will be interesting to watch, though, is that they're trying to play a little bit different this year. You know, last year they kind of had the traditional point guard bring the ball up the floor and run the offense, but they're trying to move away from that and sort of have multiple initiators on the perimeter. So while he might be the point guard, well, he is going to be the point guard, it's going to be kind of an open offense in terms of who can bring the ball up the floor, who can attack off the dribble. So I think it's probably going to take some time for them to build some chemistry playing that way.
Bilal Coulibaly, growth this year, the kind of the next step that you think here, Chase. I mean, for me, that sort of next hurdle and whatever tier of player, whatever you want to call it, however you want to quantify it, would be him getting his own offense a little bit, right? Being able to take some guys on, in addition to knocking down some of those catch and shoot opportunities. Where are we there in terms of his growth into a fully rounded player?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. First of all, on the idea of growth, he actually grew an inch taller over the past year. So he's now 6'7" and a half without shoes, 6'9" in shoes when he's on the court. He also gained 10 pounds of muscle, and you could just tell he's a little bit bigger. His shoulders are bigger. And what I've noticed watching him play throughout the preseason is with that extra size and strength, and of course the experience of playing 1 year in the NBA and also going and getting the silver medal in the Olympics, he's just a lot more confident and assertive on the court. And we've seen that on defense. You know, he had a really nice block against Scotty Barnes a couple games ago where his head was basically level with the rim. But also on offense, as you mentioned, he focused a lot this offseason on becoming a more efficient dribbler, having a tighter handle. And I think we've seen a little bit of that against the Raptors a couple games ago. He had a nice rebound, took it out to the three-point line, and then crossed up former Maryland star Bruno Fernando and threw down a really nice dunk. And I think there's been little moments like that. It hasn't been a lot, but I think we're seeing some progress where he's just a more assertive, less timid with the ball in his hands.
Chase Hughes of Monumental on G&D's Beltway Blitz. How should I set my expectations for the trio of rookies? And this year, what should I be looking for from when they open the year to midway through the year to the end of the year in their development?
Well, I think they're all going to play quite a bit. I mean, Alex Saar going in, obviously, second overall pick in a rebuild. You knew he was going to get a lot of minutes. Bob Carrington was all summer league. He was a lottery pick. I think you could tell he was going to play a lot. But Keyshawn George has really made a nice case for himself, especially in the preseason. He played well in the summer league, but in the preseason, I think everyone's been impressed with his shooting efficiency and his approach to the game. He's a really smart player. So I think all three of those guys are going to be in the rotation. And I think they're going to show flashes. I think they're going to have their rookie moments. But I think for Saar, you're going to focus on the defense and the rim protection. And can he help the Wizards improve their struggling defense, particularly at the rim and in the paint? Bob Carrington, really good at shooting off the dribble, creating off the dribble, so watch out for that. And then Keyshawn George is just a really smart, good player in terms of his shot selection. He's a really good outside shooter. So that's how I would kind of set the expectations for those three.
Chase, good to catch up, buddy. Talk again soon.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime. Thank you.
See you, my friend. Hit that hockey sounder, Darius. Our guy, Smoking Al Koken, good to see him back on my television set last night, breaking down the Washington Capitals. Al, I liked that win last night. That was a good one. I thought it was kind of the polar opposite of how they played against New Jersey. They were the better club last night, deserved the W.
They, I think, set the blueprint for how this team can be successful. It was four lines. It was all six defensemen. It was great goaltending. And, you know, the thing that's really kind of caught my eye, and I will include game one as well, where I thought they had some good moments. They're a much faster team right now. And they also seem to be willing and able to get to the front of the net. Two things that Spencer Carberry had wanted to change, certainly getting to the front of the net and creating traffic, creating havoc, looking for some loose change, was something he wanted all last year, and they did it very sporadically. But I've seen a lot more of it in these first two games. You saw a lot of it last night. And one of the things that impressed me is you're going against not only a very good Vegas team, but a very big physical Vegas defense, and they still found a way to get to the front of the net and create some havoc and create some goals.
Al, it seemed like even though Ovi was held off the goal sheet for a second straight game to start the year, he had the boots moving last night. Couple of really impressive assists. The second one to Protas was gorgeous. Six shots on goal. What'd you think about the grade eight?
You know, Grant, one of the things that I thought was interesting when Spencer Carberry talked about the game afterwards, we kind of talked about the way the team reacted to the disappointment of game one. They knew they were, you know, going to be in a difficult spot with New Jersey already playing three games, and the Capitals were going to be one of the only two teams in the National Hockey League that had yet to play a game. So they knew Jersey was going to be kind of up and running while the Caps were going to kind of have to feel their way into the regular season. And he talked about how the team was very disappointed. Well, you know, then you have to turn to your leaders for that, right? Well, the biggest leader on that team is your captain. And I think Ovi certainly met the response that you wanted. He was out there, as you said, was very engaged, moving quite well. Again, I don't know if the move to right wing had anything to do with it. I think it was more about the pride of this still veteran group that was not happy with the way the result turned out for them on Saturday night and were bound to determine to prove differently. And again, we've also seen, right, this team, for whatever reason, seems to rise up against the good teams. They sometimes fall flat or don't give the performance you'd expect against the weaker teams. And they knew they had a good challenge against Vegas. And I love the way they responded to it.
Al, you touched on it. I want to ask you about this move to right wing for Ovechkin. I, I don't know, man. You've forgotten more about hockey literally just now since I started the sentence than I'll know in my entire life. But that seems pretty dramatic for, hey, this is game number two. Let's try something completely different than he's done for all but the Adam Oates years here in Washington. What did you make of that?
Well, not only that, Danny, but then moving Mangiapane off that line.
Yeah.
Those guys had worked with Strom together. Obviously, the insertion of Verano was kind of expected, but he made a number of different moves that after one game. I'm right with you. I was a little surprised by that. But I think, you know, when you look at this team, you've got a lot of guys now that are kind of playing out of position to a certain degree. I mean, they'd asked Protas to play right wing. He's a left-handed shot. They'd asked Mangiapane to play right wing. He's a left-handed shot. Even though Ovi's a right-handed shot who loves playing left wing, there does get to be more of a little balance. There are easier things to do for Ovechkin in any guy on his normal side in terms of playing the puck off the boards and things like that. So much easier to do crisply and cleanly on your forehand than you get on your backhand. So I think there was a little bit of that to it as well. It's going to be interesting to see, does this continue? Obviously, you're going to probably see him back there for the Dallas game because they were very successful last night. But it is going to be something, both Ovi and Spencer Carberry have said, it really doesn't make that big a difference where Ovi plays. He's going to be on both sides of the ice. I mean, remember, assist number 700 came from the left side of the ice. So he finds his way to where he wants to go, but he was engaged last night, and we'll see if this is something that can, you know, can help him out by keeping more things on his forehand and making passes and things like that a little easier for him, clears out of the zones, little things like that that could help the overall product.
Al, I was going to say, I noticed him like twice on the right side of the ice in the first periods last night. So we make a lot out of like where he's listed, but he's going to do what he's going to do. Real quick, you mentioned the goalie situation. We have not talked a lot on our show about Logan Thompson yet, who came over from the Golden Knights, played his old mates last night. He was terrific last evening, got off to a fast start here in D.C. How good do you think he could be this year? He's only 27. This could be a real sneaky, huge addition for Washington.
Well, it's interesting, Grant. Both guys are going to be unrestricted free agents at the end of the year, right? So there's a lot for both guys to play for. There's no doubt in my mind in the two preseason games where he had the net for the entire 60, and in one case, a little more than that, he was the best player on the ice for the Capitals in both of those games. So I think what you saw from him is exactly kind of what we saw last night. You can say what you want about the preseason, but when you're a newcomer, you got to make good first impressions. And I think the team really understood that he won the Jersey game in Jersey by his individual play, and that Logan Thompson, by his performance, showed you that, hey, I'm just, you know, not a guy that you can, you know, I'm here in case of emergency, break glass. You can use me whenever you need me. And it did sound today, as Spencer Carberry spoke with the media, maybe not a strict goalie rotation the way they have in Boston for the last couple of years with Swayman and Allmark, where one game is yours, the next game is the other guy's, and back and forth and back and forth. But he did make it very clear that he wants to make sure both guys are ready to go and both guys are going to get plenty of playing time to start the season to make sure both are really in tip-top playing condition and sharp for when they need him.
Al, great as always, buddy. Good to speak with you.
All right, guys, thanks.
We'll see you, pal. There you go. Hit that local 53 sounder, Darius. Our buddy Nick Akerich. Nick, you don't have to do anything about this, but my streak is intact for the 57th straight time. When looking up your Twitter, I typed A-C-K because I just typed C-K in your first name, Nick. It is a streak that I'm not really proud of. I keep doing it. I'll never, ever learn. Thank you for joining us. Here's my question. Is anything figured out about this Washington offense yet, or are there more wrinkles to come?
No, I don't think they're, you know, I don't think they've been figured out at all yet. I mean, they were able to move the ball, especially in the second half, pretty well against the Ravens defense. And, you know, Cliff keeps adding new wrinkles, you know, every single week. I mean, the back-to-back screens that we saw, the flea flicker, the fake flea flicker to the screen, and then the tunnel screen after faking a wide screen. So he's just continuing to, like, add to what he's doing week in and week out. And so it's just tough for teams to kind of catch up to that. And that was kind of a criticism of Cliff, you know, at Arizona, but he seems to kind of understand that he's got to keep adapting each week.
What do you make of the marriage between he and Daniels. And everyone's going to want to say, well, how much is Jaden bailing him out? How much is he helping Daniels? I saw yesterday Daniels is like top three in throwing to his first read, number one in EPA when he does. It just seems like they're both really benefiting each other. It's been very harmonious.
Yeah, it's been a perfect match so far. I think Cliff's done a really good job of kind of, you know, understanding what Jaden's strengths are and capitalizing on those. And then Jaden's been able to kind of, you know, make plays outside of that. Even when that first read isn't open, we've seen him these past couple of weeks really kind of look to get the ball downfield when he's scrambling, which, again, was not something he wanted to do too much in college. And even the first 2 weeks, he wasn't really looking to do that. And he's kind of flipped that script immediately. So I think the two of them just work really, really well together. And right now, nobody can really seem to stop him.
Nick, I generally just default to and prefer the Austin Eckler style of running back. That's what I want. I want five of those. I obviously don't make that many Austin Ecklers, but I want scat back, pass catcher, blitz picker upper, and then like seventh on my list is how do you run between the tackles. But I'm willing to begrudgingly admit that they really missed Brian Robinson this past weekend. How important is he to what they do?
Yeah, Brian Robinson he's a very good back. I mean, you know, with my job, we don't value running backs too highly. It just kind of comes with it. I mean, you know, we've seen teams kind of go through the draft and kind of get these guys in the third, fourth round and kind of, you know, cycle them in and out. And Brian Robinson is another example of that, who's kind of comes in and knows what he needs to do to kind of get those ugly yards, those 3-4 yards. And there were some examples of Eckler kind of missing some holes and, you know, missing some big gains. But Brian Robinson is very, very good at that. And he's proven to be very good at that over his career. And they definitely did miss him. And it would be great if they got him back.
What do you make of the wide receiver room to this point?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, it performed a lot better than what I thought was going to happen going into the season. I think a lot of that is to do with Cliff and how he is kind of, you know, scheming some guys open. But the addition of Noah Brown is really important. I think he's done a really good job coming in right away and, you know, performing. And Luke McCaffrey is still it's a ticking time bomb at this point. He continues to get open, but for whatever reason, it's just not getting targets right now. I think you'll see a big Luke McCaffrey game come in the near future. And so, yeah, they've just performed well over expectations. We obviously know what Terry's doing after a slow start. He's been pretty incredible. So definitely performed well over what I thought they were going to do. And, yeah.
So, Nick, you mentioned Luke McCaffrey. To me, I feel like, and maybe I'm giving too much benefit of the doubt here to Cliff Kingsbury, but I feel like just bear with me here for a second. A couple straight weeks, they've tried very similar looking quarterback runs that have been stuffed. And I almost feel like they're doing a lot of, we're setting this up so that everybody sees it so that we have that counter to it in a couple of weeks when nobody's expecting it. I feel like the same thing about Luke McCaffrey, right? Where it's we're almost willing to short-term sacrifice something. Like I remember back in the day, I remember that Manny Ramirez talking about how he would take a pitch that he knew he could hammer, so making the pitcher think that he could go back there in a crunch time situation, and then he'd hit the ball 7 million miles. I'm wondering if something like that might be going on where they're saving some of their, oh, wait till you see us do this.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it when you're kind of rewatching games, the way they set stuff up. The tunnel screen I talked about was a perfect example of it. They kept running this RPO counter, and they kept giving it to the back every single time, but still showing that screen each time. So they finally go back to it, they show that screen, but then this time they add a little wrinkle into it. Ravens weren't expecting it. So it's something that really good play callers do. Kyle Shanahan's talked a bunch about how he'll purposely call a run play just to get 2 yards, just because he's setting something up later in the game. And Cliff has done a really good job of that. And again, that was something that he didn't do too well in Arizona. And he's already kind of figured that out and has done a really good job with it.
Great. As always, Nick, we appreciate you. But thanks, buddy.
Yep. You guys have a good one.
See you.
Got it. Check him out. PFF.com. That is Nick Akridge on our Beltway Blitz. Strong blitz there for you today on Grant and Danny. We got a blitz of the NFC East coming up at 5 o'clock. We'll talk to the Cowboys, Eagles, and Giants beat reporters lined up today, including R.J. Choppy, Morning Show 105.3 in Dallas, one of the guys that was interviewing Jerry Jones yesterday when Jerry Jones said something to the effect of, if you don't ask me nice questions, then I'm going to have someone else do this interview. We'll ask R.J. about that. I think that should be fun.
Indeed.
Next on Grant and Danny. No John Allen, a lot of problems on the defensive line moving forward. Is this a disaster or just a setback? You're listening to The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, the good news is that we did add some people today, but by and large, the people have been in here. So whether you're in the practice or in the game, like, that's super important, Nikki, to make sure that handles in the very correct way that we want it to. And so we had, as the old saying, go two steps forward, one step back, and took a step back into that space. And we certainly intend on getting that back to the way that we need to, for sure.
That's Dan Quinn on the defensive line. Tough day for the D-line for the Commanders on Sunday in Baltimore as John Allen was lost for the year with a torn pec. Javonte Jean-Baptiste suffered an injury and was in a boot leaving the locker room. He's been placed on injured reserve, going to miss at least a month. And we don't know really what the status is on Dorrance Armstrong other than that he didn't practice today. It doesn't sound very good for the next couple of days and maybe even Sunday, but I don't want to put the cart before the horse there. Very possible, though, they're without three defensive linemen. But I want to zero in on Allen really quickly. Do we think the loss of John Allen is a huge, huge blow or just an inconvenience? Is this a setback or a disaster? Danny, 3 years ago, this would have been a death sentence.
This would have been the easiest segment of all time.
It does not feel like that anymore because you have Daron Payne next to him. You drafted Johnny Newton at 36, which is effectively a late first-round pick. More so than a true second-round pick. You've obviously got Mathis, who you drafted in the second round. They rotate heavily anyway. And if we're being honest, while Allen is a really, really good player who takes on doubles, it's not like he was having one of his best starts to the season anyway. So how do you feel about this?
This is a setback. This is a bad defense whose defense is still bad. Now, where they're going to miss him, Grant, isn't as much on a given rep if he's in one of the 50 snaps per game or, you know, on a third and seven or here, there, and everywhere. It's team stuff. It's locker room stuff. It's cultural stuff, right? That's tone setter. That's veteran. That's leader. That's the guy on the road that's picking up the tab for, you know, the guy on the rookie deal, right?
But they're not short on that anymore either. They signed a bunch of old guys.
Totally true.
They've got Bobby Wagner, who really runs the locker room as it is. They've got Frankie Louvu, who's taken over a lot of the Allen
They've speeches. Got leadership. Don't get me wrong. They're not devoid of it. But you heard Austin Eckler with us yesterday, right, talking about Allen. I mean, this is one of the dudes that everybody knows is the dude.
Let's play
right?
that clip. Austin Eckler on Grant and Danny yesterday talking about what you're suggesting, mm-hmm. which is that Allen is one of the heart and soul guys on the team.
Yeah, it's freaking devastating, obviously, man, just for what he means. Not even as a player as far as on the field, we'll get to that in a second, but let's just say in our locker room too, like he's definitely one of those leaders, one of our guys that brings us up, you know, during practice or during the game, you know, gives us a speech, you know, really connected to a pretty much the entirety of the team and the organization, been here for a long time. So one of those life guys in the locker room. And then obviously on the field, you know, is definitely a terror, holds his own, strong. And so it's obviously a hit to our team and, you know, we're wishing him the best. But definitely something that is going to definitely affect us. So now it's not necessarily next man up. It is, but you know, it's like, it sucks because you can't really replace that type of leadership, you know?
And that's kind of the point to me, right? Is this is not, as you said very well, if this is 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you're going, what the hell do they do without that production? That's if things go right, that's an 8.5, 9 sack guy with 12 tackles for a loss, you know, 20 quarterback hits, disruptive plays, drawing holding penalties, someone that offenses 100% have to game plan for. I don't know that that's the case now. Now, there may be something going on that I'm just simply not aware of schematically, or the design may be different. Sometimes defensive tackles are unsung, right, where their job is to be double-teamed. Their job is to be in the way so that somebody can run free. I mean, you think of like Tony Siragusa, rest in peace, from Baltimore. His job was to be in the way so that Ray Lewis could run unfettered to the football. Sometimes that's the deal. But you feel like the production isn't otherworldly. This defense can't stop anything unless they really put their mind to stopping one thing, and then they give up 7 other things. So the defense was bad before. They'll be bad after. I know it's a little bit, you know, smug, tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic, and pedantic, but I think it's true. Like, this is not a good defense now.
Right.
Take John Allen off it. Surprise, still not a good defense.
Yeah, you could be bad, lose a really good player, and be a lot worse. But I also think a lot of times, as seasons go on and groups improve and get on the same page and figure out some footing, that happens with the natural attrition rate of losing guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember covering the 2012 Redskins beat, and in that 7-game winning streak, I remember there was a moment. Was Haslett still?
It was Haslett. He's going,
yeah,
what's his
so
name?
The line I remember from the press conference was, I think the guy's name was Jerome Murphy. Was like number 45 defensive back. I could be mixing up two DBs. But they were bringing in these random dudes, literally street free agents. And at one point, Haslett went out on the field and started screaming, and he didn't know his name. The guy had been there for like 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns around, he's like, who is that? He's like, bleep it, 45, 45. And he's like pointing like, go, go, I want you there. And the point is, they just win that game and they won 7 in a row.
He's like,
just random dudes.
Richard Crawford returns a punt almost to the house against Baltimore.
Exactly.
It's just charmed.
Yeah. So that does happen. So it's not like you always need your best player. Sometimes when you get rolling, you miss that guy. You see this in every sport.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your World Series run, your Super Bowl run, and one of your key ingredients isn't there, but the magic is been sprinkled over the team, so to speak. I view the Allen loss as a setback more than a disaster. I didn't want to play our normal game of little deal, big deal,
mm-hmm.
because I think that is not only disrespectful to the player and the person that Allen is to say little deal, but it's also not accurate. To say that it's a little deal that John Allen won't be there is not true. But I think you could call it more of a setback than a disaster. Like a injury to one of the real key stars to this whole thing. There are guys you could say, I won't even throw their names out, but you could guys that you could
sure.
say, if that guy gets hurt, it's a death sentence. If that player gets hurt, this whole year changes considerably. And oddly enough, at this point, I'm not sure that Allen is on that list, even as part of a bad defense and not a particularly good defensive line right now.
Two things. One, Jerome Murphy wore number 45.
There you go.
Second of all, that's the way I see it. And again, it sounds so disrespectful to the player that's done nothing wrong. Like, all John Allen has ever done is try to win here. And that's why I feel so terrible for him, is now that it's finally happening, like, the thing that you're trying to change and get to is here, and you don't get to enjoy it. Sports are cruel and evil at times, and this is one of those times where there's nothing fair about that. You went through the Andy Dufresne 500 yards of all the stuff, and then there was a policeman waiting to cuff you and stuff you when you got through the tunnel. Like, that's what's happened, basically, right? It just stinks. So, in terms of that, I feel awful. But from a football perspective, yeah, they're not going to get much pass rush before. I don't see it now. You're not better, obviously, without John Allen, but I don't see it as this, what, might as well not even play the game now. You know
okay.
what I mean? I don't see it like that.
So if we both agree on that, there is a bigger picture problem on the D-line, though, because you didn't just lose him. And he is the best of the three players that got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But you lost a really helpful defensive end in Dorrance Armstrong. You lost a very serviceable and oft-used defensive end in Javonte Jean-Baptiste, right? So between the three of those guys, let's say all three are out this week. We already know Allen is out for the year.
Mm-hmm.
We already know Baptiste is out for a month. And let's just say potentially you don't have Dorrance Armstrong. That's two ends and a tackle. That is very likely, three new players on the defensive line that get elevated, called up, have expanded roles. We might say it's more of a smaller deal problem, what have you, that John Allen's not available, but collectively,
when you add it up, yeah.
I think this is a disaster for this coming week against a team with Chuba Hubbard averaging 5.6 a carry and the Panthers having just mauled the Falcons' defensive front. Washington should still win the game, and they should be able to move the ball, both running and passing, and they'll create more through the air, and that's why you win games. But I do think this is a problem for this D-line in a big, big way on
Sunday.
Oh, it's
an issue. You face somebody, again, there aren't that many Baltimores, but you face somebody that can hand it off and grind it on you a little bit, or you know, hit you with some play action, or you know, even drop back and sling it. You're not creating much pressure there. It's more Farrell. It's more Fowler. It's maybe some more Obata who hasn't played a ton. Maybe Jamin Davis, but that's not better, to your point. So losing John Allen and just saying, okay, it's a one-for-one swap, it's not, but just in terms of personnel-wise, okay, his snaps go to Johnny Newton, and what used to be Johnny Newton snaps are now, you know, Sheldon Day or Jalen Holmes or Rafael Bada. You're a little bit worse there. You are. But then you add up no Dorrance Armstrong for however long, we don't know, no John Baptiste, and now you kind of go, okay, wait a minute, they're not actually the same for a group that wasn't good to begin with.
Yeah, boom. You didn't have a lot of margin for error here. Like, if the best defense in the NFL, whoever you want to assign that to, but the best statistical defense or the best defensive line lost three guys, maybe you'd feel worse because you go, oh boy, obviously those are all really helpful players if we're playing at that level where they're number one. But at least in that situation, you go, everyone is collectively good enough to elevate some that maybe it's not the biggest deal. When you're just not that good anyway, you don't have margin for error. There's not, how do you get worse than bad? You get really, really bad. You get exposed even more often. I think what they're going to do is they'll start with Cleland Farrell, Daron Payne, Johnny Newton at tackle now for Allen, and then if Armstrong can't go, on rundowns it'll be Obata, and on passing downs it'll be Fowler. Jamin Davis will also play a lot at defensive end, but I don't get the sense they want him out there on a whole lot of running downs, even though he did a really good job the first series or two in week one. Seems like just
maybe a play or two here or there, but you don't want to major in that as an undersized defensive end.
But you'll see Jamin Davis. You'll probably see Jalen Holmes. I think you're going to see a lot of Sheldon Day and Fidarian Mathis. Those are the big bodies, the run stuffers, the smart car, space-eating types. You know, Sheldon Day was listed, I think, on one of the releases I just saw. Like, his PFR is 285 pounds. He was listed at, like, 335. I mean, he is a big, big boy. And then Fidarian Mathis he's not going to rush the quarterback. I think the next time he blows someone up and gets downhill, Danny, will be the first. You know, when he hits the quarterback in the face, just taking on blockers and rushing the QB. He's here to eat some double teams. And I would pair him with Payne as often as I possibly could. And then I'd maybe pair, like, Day with Newton and do, like, the line change thing they were doing with Allen and Payne before.
So to me, this is now Joe Witt laboratory time, right? Where if you just try to line up and push people, you're going to lose. Now, I'm not talking about the game. Hopefully you got Jaden Daniels and you score 40 points. But if you just try to play straight up against somebody, it ain't going to work. You got to get exotic. Let's get weird. Let's do all sorts of combinations and things that people haven't seen yet. The best this defense played was when they felt confident. They had that little swagger against Cleveland. Now, the four of us against Cleveland might fare pretty well. But they're blitzing every other play. It's mid at the quarterback. Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner, double A gap, mug this up. And we'll zone dog this, that, and the other thing. Utilize Louvu in that way, right? You can't just line up and say, all right, next man up, it is Jalen Holmes. Go get the quarterback on 3rd and 7 in the fourth. That's a no for me. You know what I mean? Like, let's do something a little bit more exotic here.
Do you feel any better about the Newton pick at this point, either by way of how he's played, what you've noticed, or just the fact that now he's about to have a huge role?
Less so about him specifically, and more so that the offense is way better than I thought. Like, to me, my viewpoint was, you have a rookie quarterback. How could we not be doing everything possible in the offseason to, you know, build this nest? And it turns out the nest was so well built. It's so comfortable in there. Everybody's relaxing, and they're all the worms you want. And you could be warm at night if the breeze is too cold.
So
it's
many
secure.
Worms.
When the wind blows, the branches aren't even rocky. Yeah. It's just up there snuggled. Little Jaden, little Five snuggled up.
I didn't think John Allen would suffer a torn pec.
Right.
But I did feel like he's 29. He's in his final year almost certainly without any guaranteed money beyond this with the team. And if it's not his final year, then it would be Payne's probably. You're not going to keep doing that routine if you're going to draft Newton, but it's 8 years now for a guy who's closing in on 30 years old.
First of all, that's a grinded out position too, by the way. Yeah. Nothing but car wrecks. And never forget, by the way, he fell in the draft because of injury concerns with his shoulder and things like that. And all he's ever done is play hard and play pretty damn well for Washington.
Let's open up the phones for you guys. MGM National Harbor listener lines available to you next. 1-800-636-1067. If you'd like to chime in, the question for you is, do you view the John Allen loss as a setback or a disaster on defense? And how do you expect them to get by now moving forward if, in fact, they're down three D linemen for a week or two? We know there's going to be two out for at least a month and one out for the remainder of the year. G&D on the Fan. Alongside Danny Ruye, I'm Grant Paulson. This is The Fan. We'll blitz the East coming up at the top of the hour. Pretty fun week in the NFC East. You got an Eagles coach yelling at fans. You got a Cowboys owner trying to fire people that don't work for him. And the New York Giants have two wins.
Look at the audience. Pop the audience.
Meanwhile, in the nation's capital, the most powerful city in the world, the Commanders are 4-2. They got the Panthers in town. Chance for 5-2. And sitting atop the division where the air is crisp.
I'm just thinking about saying it. Oh, thanks, Alex. You're sitting pretty after a loss. You still feel the best. Like, just gives you an idea of how nice it is up here.
Question for you guys is, just how worried about this Allen injury out for the year, the D-line issues, are you at this point? Do you feel like it's disastrous or more of a setback? George is in La Plata on G&D. What's up, George?
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Hey, just think it's an inconvenience. We really haven't heard much out of Allen and Payne so far the first six games. And I don't even believe he'll be with us next year. So I'm looking for the new young bloods jump up and make a name for themselves.
Thanks, buddy. I also don't think he'll be here next year. I have not for the better part of the last calendar year. He has no guaranteed money beyond this season. That having been said, this is not the wide receiver position. This is not the running back position. When people say, and you hear this a lot, I just don't hear their names very often. You know, they're not doing anything. They're not getting called very often. Well, number one, it's a rotational position where you're not on the field more based on the way Quinn runs it, which is different how they did it previously.
Yep.
At times, like 60 or 65, 70% of the snaps is a lot in the Quinn situation. That's number one. But number two, a really good play for John Allen might be taking on two. And somebody else getting home, somebody else getting a one-on-one, someone else making the tackle. So just not hearing a defensive tackle's name called does not necessarily mean they're not doing some good things.
Yeah, it's unfair. Like if you go to New York and you see Dexter Lawrence, who's leading the league in sacks, you don't hear his name called for a game. You go, okay, they held him in check, right? Or defensive end like Myles Garrett, who had a zero in the stat sheet a couple weeks ago. But most defensive, or not most, you just never know what the assignment is. That's what I always like sort of hesitate and balk when I see some grades about defensive tackles or certain things. You have no idea what they were asked to do in a given week. Because we've seen, though, years where he has penetrated, been a problem, disrupted plays, again, the TFLs, the quarterback hits, the pressures, the sacks that follow those things, and he's not doing a ton of that just yet, you're going, okay, maybe it's not the same year, but who knows? Maybe it's a total schematic departure from what we've seen.
I also think Quinn just rotates guys at that position more.
Yep.
And on the D-line more. That's been really interesting to me, something I've noticed. In his career, Allen has played as many as 82% of snaps in 2022.
62% this year.
79% last year. 70% in 2021. This year, a career low since he was a rookie, and, well, that was just because he got hurt. Honestly, he played five games. But 62% of snaps for John Allen. He actually played almost every down as a rookie. Let's go to Danny in Suitland. What's up, Danny?
Hey.
Are you there?
What? Yeah, I'm good.
You're on the radio. Who is this? Did you call the radio station?
Yeah, this is Danny from Suitland.
Yeah, you're on the air.
That's what we said, like, a little while ago.
Yeah. Hey, look at here, man. Hey, he dodged the bullet because him and getting that money, like McClellan out there working, now it's up to Payne. You got to show y'all are leaders. Y'all got the money. Y'all got to show these new guys that what they need to be doing. Now, if somebody come off that bench and put the work in, I got one of them going out of here next year. And that's my rap on it.
That is a good rap.
That's Danny from Suitland for you. Boom.
I'm trying to just looking. Who was that?
Danny from Suitland. You might have got Leroy right there.
Let's go to Richard in Front Royal on Grant and Danny. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, boys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, dude.
Hey, you know, look, John Allen, he's a good commander. He's a good captain, more so than anything else. You know, he's a leader on this team. No, I'm just kidding.
He really is okay.
He really is. He's where his fate is, okay?
Look, man, this guy's a captain.
He draws
for a reason,
me a map because
right?
he's been there before, okay?
Look, he's a captain, right? You know, he's a leader on this team for a reason. I have complete faith that whoever decides to take that position is going to be well-trained and well-educated because of John Allen. And also, I have complete faith in this coaching staff to put anybody in that position to succeed. And in my opinion, someone who's been playing balls out and, you know, has really been quiet, you know, from a media standpoint, everything is Fedarian Athens. He's quick. He can clog up a hole. And every time he's on the field, I think he's making plays. And I think he's been kind of under the radar. And well, I'm a little disappointed in hearing that. But then again, you know, Johnny Newton, I think he's going to be great. But in my opinion, I think Fedarian Mathis is going to fill the hole pretty well.
Thank you for the Ron memories, the post-traumatic
always
Ron
good
recall that you provide there. That was nicely done. I think that Mathis does a pretty good job as a big-bodied guy taking on blocks and attracting blocks. But I don't see any...
He's not a disruptor.
Pass rushing... creating penetration, disrupting. I don't see that.
But that's okay, by the way. There's still room for that at the table as well, like, because you need that too.
Johnny Newton can do those things, and that's what I'm hoping. Johnny Newton, who did some good things in the run game too. He had an awesome play where he shedded a block, made a tackle right at the line of scrimmage of Derrick Henry. I think he's the guy, if you told me one of those two guys ends up having like 4.5 sacks or something the rest of the way and giving you that Allen presence and in a pocket-pushing, penetrating way, I think that's Johnny Newton. Let's go to Saeed in Upper Marlboro on Grant and Danny. What's up?
Hey, guys. So I think the best way that I look at this is I have to ask myself, have I changed what I wanted out of this season? And that's how I look at it. Because when the season was getting ready to start, I said to myself, I just want to be better. I want to see new talent. I want to see things trending in the right direction. If that's what I want to see, then John Allen's loss, while big, is still just a setback. If I'm thinking to myself that I want to see them go deep in the playoffs or something, then clearly a John Allen name and his presence and everything is much bigger than that. But in a lot of ways, it is a silver lining for me that if he is out, these new guys can come in and kind of give it a shot. And I will also point to the stat that you guys mentioned about the defensive snaps. Go back and check when the defensive snaps started to dip. They started to dip after our last loss, not this previous one, but the one before, where he said he's going to start making some adjustments on the defensive line and do some switching. Go and check the stats. They all started dipping. He started playing less on defense than he was in the beginning of the season. So I think the writing was on the wall a little bit anyways, saying, I'm not getting the production out of these guys anyways. Let's rotate them out. So for me, it's not Armageddon that we're losing John Allen for the rest of the season, because I'm sticking to my guns, which is whatever we do this season above 4-5 and 6 wins is house money to me anyways.
Well, see, I think you got to change that plan. That was a good philosophy. They're already 4-2. They should be 5-2 after this week. So for you now to just say, well, I got 10 games and 11 weeks left, but it's, you know, whatever happens, happens. No, they're pretty good. They got a special quarterback, it appears. They've got a great offense. So I think you should recalibrate your expectations for the year. He played 64% of snaps in week one. He played 70-plus percent, low 70s, each of the two games after that. And then there was a dip going into Arizona, 56%. 52% against Cleveland.
But I would say two blowout wins in that one, and then he gets hurt in the final game where he's in the 50s also.
Right. No, they blew out the Cardinals. They blew out the Browns, so you get him off his feet a little bit.
Yeah.
To your point. He was playing over 70% of snaps against the Giants, which was a close game, and 74% against the Bengals. So I think that would be why he played less in those other two games.
Yeah.
Everybody played less that matters in those other two games. Yeah. They literally didn't play starters in the fourth quarter.
My feet is up.
Against the Browns, which was nice. Let's blitz the NFC East, a division mostly in shambles outside of D.C. where the Commanders have been cooking. We're Grant and Danny on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.